But this didn't stop either of them, either Pushkin or Dante. Dante, in fact, continued increasingly visibly to flirt with Pushkin's wife, who was now his own sister-in-law. So Pushkin at this point wrote to Dante's father, the Dutch ambassador, remember, a letter that was so crude and insulting that when young Dante saw this letter, he really felt he had no choice, given the rules of honor of the day, than to challenge Pushkin to a duel. They fought on January 27th, 1837. The chosen weapons were pistols, in a grove on the northern outskirts of St. Petersburg, a grove that has the rather ominous name of Black Stream, Chornaya Rechka. Pushkin lost and died 2 days later after great suffering from his injuries. Death transformed his image. It truly reminded people of what they had lost, their best writer, a sign in some ways of how mature Russian literature had become, how it had mastered and even gone beyond, many felt, European style, how original it had finally become. Contemporaries recalled at the time that all Petersburg was talking about Pushkin. His waning popularity was suddenly replaced with new enthusiasm. And when his body lay in state in his apartment in the city, thousands of people came to pay their final respects. Some reports said that people tore bits off his clothing while he lay there, and then women even came along and cut bits of pieces off his hair, relics of the great Pushkin. His books, of course, began to sell out immediately, and the printers could hardly keep up. And government reports expressed open fear this whole thing might turn into a massive political demonstration. Nothing like this outpouring of emotion for a poet or any non-government official had ever taken place in Russian history before. In fact, this really was, as the government feared, a type of movement of society, something still very frightening to the state, especially to Nicholas I. In fact, the gendarme chief described the whole thing as, in his words, an indecent tableau of the triumph of the liberals. This was, in other words, in many ways, a powerful moment in Russian history when Russian citizens were saying, we exist as Russians because of our common love of a great writer, because of what we share culturally and emotionally, not because we are simply subjects of the Tsar. Very hard to describe these feelings, but everybody understood something important was expressed in the feelings about Pushkin now that he died. Now the state, the government, gave warnings to newspapers, please do not make too much of all of this thing, and certainly not of Pushkin. But a few newspapers managed to do so anyway and had to be reprimanded after the fact. For example, this obituary appeared in the literary supplement of one St. Petersburg paper. I quote a bit of it. The sun of our poetry has set. Pushkin has passed away. Every Russian heart knows the irreparable loss, and every Russian heart is torn to pieces. Pushkin, our poet, our joy, our national glory. And these were the first indications of a cult of Pushkin as a national symbol that would continue to grow. In fact, already before he died, there began to be something like this, a hint of the type of cult of Pushkin that would emerge. One writer, Nikolai Gogol, also a well-known writer at the time, began to already describe Pushkin as a national poet. For example, he wrote in 1834, Pushkin's name calls to mind the thought of a Russian national poet. He's the manifestation of the Russian spirit. In him, the Russian nature, the Russian soul, the Russian language, the Russian character are reflected with the same purified beauty in which a landscape is reflected on the convex surface of optical glass. His life is absolutely Russian. Pushkin's death made such arguments even more compelling. And the high point of all this came in 1880, some years later, but part of a growing movement of seeing Pushkin as their national poet. When there was a huge three-day celebration organized around the unveiling of a great new monument to Pushkin that would sit at the heart of Moscow. This was also significantly the first major monument in Russia that was not dedicated to a political or military leader. It was built with public initiative and public funds. This was in many ways a civic act by society itself. At the unveiling, Fyodor Dostoevsky, another great writer, caught the spirit of the moment and was greeted with what observers described as wails of rapture in his speech. He declared,